The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Emma Dunphy, a very good evening to you. We heard there on the Sports Bulletin Mick McCarthy saying that last night's result and performance against New Zealand might make a difference to how people perceive the team. Will it, do you think?
Well, it was a reserve team, really. So I think what last night underlined, Matt, is that Mick likes his team to play a passing game. I thought they were very good. If, for example, Martin O'Neill had been on the touchline last night, we might have resorted to long ball football a lot earlier than we did. We persevered, even though we were 1-0 down. We played our football, and the lads, young lads mostly, quite a few making their debut, did really well.
Would you expect a few of them to make their way into the team for Monday night?
No, I wouldn't. No, it's an entirely different challenge on Monday. But I'd certainly say they've left a mark. The right back, Leo Connor, for example, I didn't know much about him. He played really well. The left back, Derek Williams, scored a great goal, headed goal.
Of course, he's injured now and can't play Monday night.
Of course, yeah, but it's not... I think Monday is a separate... Mick made it clear that the team he was going to play last night wouldn't have much to do with what he was going to do on Monday, and I think that's probably correct. Robbie Brady is the player you might have hoped to impress last night, and he didn't really have a good game. His set-piece play is dangerous and he's good, but I don't think he did enough to force his way into the team for Monday's job.
Miguel Delaney, chief football writer at The Independent, is with us as well. It was a crowd of about 18,000 last night at the Aviva. Bitterly cold night. But I suppose it proves why the European Nations Cup is there as well, or league or whatever it is they call it, to try and get rid of these pretty meaningless friendlies.
Yeah, especially when New Zealand haven't played a match in 18 months. But I suppose one side of this was, there was maybe a bit more buzz about it because they made the clever decision to announce the team beforehand and the chance to see some of these players. I mean, you know, given some of the hype about Troy Parrott, there might be a lot of people lying in the future about whether they saw his debut. We'll see how he develops, though. But yeah, completely. It's and I think most federations are in favour of that. Mind you, I was actually at something that was akin to a friendly at Wembley with England's massive 7-0 win.
Yeah, the most interesting thing of that, though, and I want to talk to you both a little bit about this, is the row this week between Raheem Sterling and Joe Gomez, which led to Raheem Sterling being left out of the England squad as punishment, and then the crowd turning on Joe Gomez as if it was somehow his fault. Tell us a little bit about the background to all of this, Miguel, how this all came about.
Well, it was a very strange moment last night. I mean, I was kind of at the time on deadline and writing, and then he was coming on and you kind of heard a few smattering of boos that got louder. And it was one of those instances where you kind of think to yourself, hang on, are they actually booing him? Obviously, it stems from what happened on Monday, which was Raheem Sterling coming into the England camp, still pretty irritated from the previous day's defeat to Liverpool for Manchester City, but as much as anything, irritated apparently by the perception of him after it, the increasing rows he got into during the game with players like Joe Gomez and Trent Alexander-Arnold. And the story is that, well, from what I've heard, that basically Joe Gomez greeted him with a smile and a little comment, nothing too incendiary, and Sterling lashed out in a kind of a physical altercation that lasted about 5-6 seconds. I think Southgate justifiably, I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff about, especially from England pros of the past, people like Rio Ferdinand, who, remember, were in England teams that didn't do all that much and were infamous for having divisions. And I think Southgate, to be fair, whatever you think of him as a manager, he's tried to mark out against that. And given that this wasn't a training ground collision, but something that actually happens in a canteen, I think he made the justifiable decision to drop Sterling, or at least punish him in some way, for one game. If he is invested in this whole idea of creating a new harmony around England, whatever you think of that. But one fallout has been that it saw Gomez kind of almost inexplicably booed last night. And apparently, hearing since, though, apparently Gomez was devastated by it. And Southgate and his assistant Chris Powell have had to go and, you know, visit him and his family and talk him up. And just move now to start him on Sunday, I suppose, to kind of show a bit of unity.
Eamon Dunphy, as an old pro, what do you make of this whole story?
I think there are training ground disagreements, and there's sometimes the odd punch is thrown. It's not unknown, so I wouldn't say it's a shock. And following the match, which was pretty, you know, heated on Sunday, I'm not surprised, really. I don't know all the facts. Maybe Gareth Southgate went a bit over the top to prove something about himself. I don't know. It's quite a severe punishment to be left out of the team. But at the same time, maybe Southgate wanted to lay down a marker to Sterling, who has matured quite a bit, is a big crowd and media favourite now, whereas he used to be, you know, not so well regarded. So
it's only a couple of years since he got castigated for a tattoo in his leg of a gun.
Yeah, no, he's had a hard time from the media, and he fought back this year and accused them of racial abuse. He has had a hard time, and he gets a hard time at Liverpool whenever he plays there because he used to be a Liverpool player. I think he's a very, very good footballer. I think he probably feels that he got a raw deal from Gareth Southgate. That's my own honest opinion. I don't think Joe Gomez, for example, would have wanted him to be left out over the incident. And what Gareth Southgate did inflated the whole issue, and that doesn't do any good for anyone. If you want sanctions against the player, you can always do something privately, and that's what you should do. It shouldn't get out into the public domain because, as McGuire was saying there, Joe Gomez ends up getting booed, you know.
Eamon, but you must have been in countless dressing rooms where people were having goals off each other. I suspect, Eamon, you might have been one or two little scraps yourself.
I did, but I was usually held the coats.
Or the drinks.
And the drinks, yeah. No, it did happen. I mean, I played with guys I hated and guys hated me. You know, this is... professional football is a tough game. And if you only play with people you like, well, then you'd be nowhere. So it's not uncommon, I don't think. Now, we saw a scratch on the side of Joe Gomez's face. I think it's quite... it happens frequently in football clubs. And I don't think Southgate did the right thing, but he's an acutely media-conscious character, and I think he was making a statement that he didn't need to make.
Yeah, what do you make of that, Miguel? Is this health and safety brought to extremes in the football workplace? Was it Gareth Southgate's media image that he was concerned about, or a genuine attempt to try and make sure that you have standards of everyone coming together?
I certainly agree that he's very acutely aware of the media perception. To be fair to him, the one thing I would say, having covered England a lot over the last 2 years, he's been extremely invested in this whole idea of getting away from kind of what would have been seen as the historic problems of the England team, kind of pandering to egos taking over the team and club divisions. And there's a phrase used, I probably can't say it at this time on the radio, I know something culture, that he's very, I think it comes from rugby and the All Blacks, where any sort of player that steps out of line, basically, they're discarded from the team. And to be fair to him, that's why players like Joe Hart have been dropped. That's why other players who the media have lobbied for inclusion have been included. And it's why other players have been somewhat delayed. It's maybe a little bit hardline in that regard, but I suppose it's his view or his approach, maybe him feeling that he needs to do something different with this England team. And I think the perspective in this case is that it happened in a canteen rather than the training grounds in front of about 20 to 25 people. So there was no chance it wasn't going to leak. In fact, to be fair to them, the statement did come out after it leaked. And also, I suppose it was the image of his, at the moment, his best player, and also one of the most influential players of the team, given how many look up to him, that was exploding like this. I don't necessarily fully agree with that culture of a team in the sense that, I mean, as Eamon was talking about there, a lot of the best players aren't necessarily very nice people and they're going to cause tension and that, and you know, a bit of conflict. But to be fair to Southgate, I do think he is consistent with how he has dealt with similar issues in the past, as well as some of his players. Whether it actually means that for England in the long run is another issue.
I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much, Miguel Delaney, chief football writer at The Independent. Eamon Dunphy, broadcaster from the Stand podcast. Thank you very much for joining us, and of course we'll be back on Monday evening And when we have the team looking forward to the Ireland-Denmark game, the make-or-break game possibly for getting to Euro 2020. After previous Rugby World Cup disasters, Irish teams have bounced back well in that season's European Cup. 2007 disaster followed by Munster winning the Heineken Cup in 2008. 2011 disappointment followed by Leinster winning the Cup in 2012. Not the case after the 2015 Rugby World Cup. But Matt Williams, do we have hopes, reasons that certainly Leinster, possibly even Munster now, might be able to challenge to win this year's event?
Oh, I think they definitely do, Matt. Certainly with the troubles at Saracens that are yet to be determined. But even if Saracens are in the race, who would be the best team in the competition, in my opinion, Leinster and Munster certainly have very, very good shot at this competition. And Ulster have a very good shot at making a quarter final. What they do after that, well, it's very early in the season. But Irish club rugby is very, very strong.
Neil Francis, Munster, of course, when we saw the group initially thought, well, that could be them bunched, given that they're in with Saracens, who've beaten them in a couple of occasions in semi-finals in recent years. You've had them also in with Racing and with the Ospreys. But Ospreys seem to be in rag order. Racing haven't been going well. And it looks like Saracens are going to play their reserves to keep their strongest team available to try and overcome that 35-point handicap in the Premiership in England. So is it looking like Munster now actually have a real chance?
Well, you never discount them. So you expect them to win. They've Racing, I think, in the second round, and then they've the back-to-back against Saracens. And that'll decide it. But they haven't been able to unpick Saracens, and they haven't been able to physically deal with the type of game that Saracens present. And that's the biggest problem, whether they've learned. And I mean, you look at it, they've faced them twice in big games over the last couple of seasons there, and they have been really badly beaten. So it's important that they, you know, come up with a plan that I don't know whether they have the firepower to do it. And that's the problem, particularly up front, because that's where they were just really badly beaten up front. And I just think, you know, Saracens, you know, they're saying a lot of things now. They're keeping their powder dry. But I think they'll have the cavalry back, unfortunately, for the Munster games. And I think they will still present as major contenders. So it's, again, whether Munster can get through, whether, first of all, they can beat them. And it's important that they beat them at home to give themselves a good chance of getting out, whether it's first or second place. You're right, the Ospreys are, they're just in pretty bad nick. So it's between those three. I'm not sure about Racing. I haven't been keeping up to date with what's going on in France. They beat Stade Francais convincingly last week, but then Heineken Mayer had to leave as a result of that. So they'll come good. They have too much quality not to be in a position to challenge. And winning over there, winning in Paris is as difficult as it is to win over in Allianz Park. So Munster, if they can do some damage and collect a point in their away games against Racing, against Saracens, they have a good chance of getting out.
Matt Williams, could it be that they really need to be looking at getting a bonus point victory away at Ospreys tomorrow evening, or is that too much to ask for, even if Ospreys have had a rotten season to date?
Well, Matt, I think Munster's season is going to be a replica of last year. Their away form is going to determine whether they're really going to make this competition theirs. And to go to Ospreys and get a bonus point would be a huge statement, because they're dropping points, or in previous seasons, they've dropped points on away matches that have cost them then away quarterfinals. If they can get a home quarterfinal, move towards a home semi, they're really, really hard to beat down in Limerick. Their record is absolutely exceptional in Limerick. On the road, their record's been very poor. Now, Ospreys, as Frano said, are in shambles. Alan Clark's under massive pressure there. A lot of talk that this could be his last weekend. So if ever they're going to go and get a bonus point and make a statement, it's this weekend against what was once a great side. And they can. Now, their bench isn't massive, and it depends what Saracens do going forward. But let's just take this a week at a time. Go away, get a bonus point win, and prove you can do something on the road. That would be a huge start for Munster.
Okay, Leinster starting tomorrow against Benetton Treviso at the RDS. Now, Neil Francis, this has looked in many respects like a soft start. Is this the perfect opportunity to look at two players in particular with potential for the Irish team in the Six Nations? Ronan Kelleher at the hooker, and a number 8, Caelan Doris, who lots of people have massive hopes for, who seems to have jumped past Max Deegan in the race to be the next Leinster number 8.
That's the problem there. Like, you stand still for a season, even, and you're gone. So if you look at it, the Byrne brothers were the coming thing, and they just didn't make enough progress at loosehead and at hooker. And I've watched Leinster A twice already this season, and that kid is so good. It's just unbelievable.
Which kid?
Ron Kelleher.
The hooker.
So just a really powerful open field runner. He's got great hands. His darts are excellent. He can hook the ball without any kind of pressure at all. He's got everything. He's a big, strong kid. He's only 21. There's another guy behind him, Dan Sheehan. He's equally brilliant. And you're sort of thinking, you know, even from a year or two out, that, you know, Sean Cronin was, you know, sort of, he's in his 33 or 34 now, and he's got bulging discs in his neck, and, you know, you're not sure how much longer. And then you're sort of saying, is Tracy good enough to play at Heineken level? He's certainly a Pro 14 player. Is he good enough to play at Heineken level, or, you know, go any further? Probably not. And then these guys, just the conveyor belt just throws them out. And it's one of the great things that, you know, when there's so much competition there, that somebody comes along and just sort of says, hey, look, watch me, watch what I can do. And he was brilliant last year, and he's been brilliant this year so far. And you just can't not pick him. And it's great that, you know, there are lots of kids there with lots of talent and ability, but the ones that go out and actually sort of say, look, you got to pick me, watch what I can do. So, and I'll be watching him tomorrow, and I've seen a lot of him this season. Doris, yeah, that's another thing. Like, Deegan was the hot young thing for a while, probably not big enough to play at 8, and Doris is probably a much better carrier. He's a smart player, and he's big workload. So, you know, Jack Conan out for, you know, until after Christmas, and if he plays well enough, you know, no guarantee that Conan will get back. So they are right, you're absolutely right. Those two are the ones to watch.
Okay, that group, Matt, also has Northampton and Leon. That's not necessarily going to be an easy group for Leinster to get out of, is it?
It's not, Matt. It's also a World Cup year, so we've got to take into account, you know, are Leon and Northampton the real deal? Because they're at the top of their respective competitions, or close to it.
Because other clubs were missing big name players.
Exactly. So look, this is the Heineken Cup's the, you know, it's the game of truth, isn't it? You can't hide here. So we'll know next week. Leinster have Leon away. Now, they've been playing some good rugby. I have to say, the top 14 has been exceptionally poor during the World Cup. I watched some games last weekend. Look, it's just a few hours of my life I'll never get back. It was horrid. I watched the Parisian game that Neil was talking about, and it was just absolute tripe. So, you know, whether Leon really are a real deal to challenge, and whether Northampton can step up in Europe, is yet to be proven. What is proven is Leinster are playing some really great rugby. They're a production line, as Neil said, but they've also now got guys like Lama, who's got, you know, he's starting to be an experienced player coming through under this great tutelage of Leo Cullen. You know, you've got Deb Toner, Ryan, Porter, they can bring off the bench Keeley, and they've still got Furlong not in that team. You know, it's a very, very good side with a very powerful bench. You know, you've got Deegan on the bench, you've got Ross Byrne, who's an exceptionally good kicker. You know, there's a lot of pluses about this Leinster side.
Okay, Matt, what about Connacht? Connacht play Montpellier on Sunday. They have Ulton Deland back in the second, or another player who I presume will be pressing for inclusion in the Six Nations squad. And they also have the return of Matt Healy on the wing and Bundy Aki in the centre. But they have loads of injuries, which really are stretching the strength of their squad. How do you expect this Champions Cup campaign to go for Connacht?
It's going to be a tough one, because they're playing Montpellier, who, during the Champions Cup, they bring out
their high veld players. Montpellier's on the high veld. There's more South Africans in Montpellier than in Johannesburg. You know, Van Redsburg and Willemsen in the second row. They've got Cruden. You know, Aaron Cruden's a fantastic player at 10. So Montpellier are really going to show or stretch Connacht, you know, in their bench. They've got Bismarck Duplessis and Odrango and, you know, one of my former players, Gregory Fitchin at Loosehead, coming on to this side. It's going to be a big test for Connacht. Montpellier have not been exceptional. They've won some games during the period when teams are weak, and they've been very poor the last few years. So it'll be an interesting one for Connacht, the big one for Connacht in this tournament. They got Toulouse. And when I said that the competition in the top 14 has been poor, to lose last Saturday against Clermont, who will be here in Ulster's pool, to lose were absolutely scintillating in pouring rain. Try after offloading try, chip kicks, you name it, they had it. And that's going to be Connacht's real, real test.
And what about Ulster, Neil Francis? An Ulster team which is short of Ulster men.
Yeah, I wrote about it there. It's just bad. You know, okay, there were selections. They had to leave a few people off. Henderson's not back yet.
Well, he's back this weekend. He's playing against Bath.
But, you know, I think a lot of people picked up on it as well there. And you just can't do that. And I'm just wondering if it's going to be a reverse or whether Ulster crowds just sort of say, look, none of our guys are in it there. So, a lot of Leinster players there, and they're not performing because I can't see Ulster doing well this year. I'm just looking at them, just sort of thinking now Bath, and it could be the same old scenario there where we'll do well, we'll pick up about, you know, sort of maybe 12, 13 points at home, but, you know, if we pick up anything away from, like, Bath are not a great side. They've Underhill back. They have a half-decent pack. Their back line is very, very good. And I could just see that if Bath get a good start here, then Ulster, you know, could get walloped.
Matt, you know Ulster well from your time there. I mean, who's going to stand up when they start singing Stand Up for the Ulster Men?
Yeah, it's staggering. There are more Leinster players in the Ulster pack than Ulster men. It's just extraordinary. I have to say I find it really sad. You know, the back line's different. There's a lot of homegrown talent there, but that's extraordinary. But, you know, look, I'm not suggesting in any way that, you know, players like McGrath and Moore and Geordie Murphy aren't going to give everything. They will give everything they have. It's just not good that Ulster are not producing their own players, you know. And this goes back, Matt, it's a little off topic. You can't fall into the South African issue where they just flooded the club 7 or 8 years ago with South African players. And I certainly hope Munster don't go down the same path, because this is what happens later on. You know, you've got to invest in the talent. And they only have to look south at what Leinster are doing, how they're trusting their kids and giving them time. If Ulster had done that, they wouldn't be in this situation. I certainly can't see them beating Bath at the Rec. I hope I'm wrong. Ulster at home are a different kettle of fish, but Neil's summation of Bath is right. They're not a great side. They've got one player that, unless Ulster deal with him, they'll lose, and that's Sam Underhill, who's coming back, and he's just one of the best, if not the best, open side flanker in the world at the moment.
Thank you very much, Matt Williams and Neil Francis.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.